925. Okay, I guess I misunderstood. In other words, you turned it off. I didn't realize that. Back to you, Eric. I see what you're saying. That's a possible approach. Okay. The latest issue of QST Magazine. I had it right here. There it is. There's a nice article on page 92, which is the world above 50 megs, discussing sporadic e-propagation. And I guess the article goes on for a full page, giving you a lot of information. There's a nice graph there. One of the things that's not known about sporadic e-propagation is that it has a very tall peak between May, June, and July of almost every single year, and it's got an extremely minor peak in late December, beginning of January. The article goes on to say that in the case of the peak of sporadic e-propagation in the summer solstice, which is occurring on June 20, you know, a little bit before and after that, it is sun angle related. It doesn't seem to be related to the sunspot cycle itself. It's just the angle that the sun hits the earth during our summertime when the sun is higher. Somehow, to us in the northern hemisphere, we've got sporadic e-propagation. When it comes to the minor peak you get in December, when the sun is very low to the horizon, they have no explanation for what's going on. Mel Wilson, and there's the Mel Wilson Memorial Prize now given by the Central States VHF Society every year, because he spent a good fraction of a lifetime from his hometown in Rochester studying sporadic E by listening to broadcast stations. Let me drop. Even Mel didn't have an explanation for why the secondary peak in sporadic E occurs in December. The best guess is that the high winds in the wintertime somehow stirs up the atmosphere and creates sporadic E, a minor amount of it. The strong amount of sporadic E that we get in the summertime, the best guess is that the thunderstorms, which create these things called sprites, when you're out in space at the International Space Station and you're looking at a thundercloud, a thunderstorm top view, a certain number of those thunderclouds are cloud-to-ground lightning, and there's this other red cloud of material that gets spit upward from the cloud during many of those lightning strikes. They're called sprites. I don't know if there's a clear explanation for what it is, but there's some fancy physics going on there. Okay, I'm going to go back to 25 and see if we have any action there. K2RIW in the TechNet. Extended version. I'm coming in through 375. I'm going in right now on 975, 147.975, which does come out to the 85 machine. However, I was listening to you on 146.25, which yet is not quite active, but pretty soon.
Yeah, we'll stand down.
Okay, looks like we're back in operation. So as you can tell, Vito, if you're still there, it sounds like Bernie K2YO, who is somewhat familiar with your power supply, he does recommend you go back to HRO or MFJ and have them investigated. It's less than desirable. I wonder if you're still there, Vito. WA2 Papa Juliet Foxtrot, K2LIW. Okay, Vito maybe had to leave. The next person on the list was Dave. AK1NS. Dave, are you still there? K2LIW in the second net.
AK1NS, see if I got it.
You've got it, Dave, and go right ahead with your question.
Okay, kind of lost my train of thought. That's kind of quick, but question has to go with constructing 2 meter quarter wave antennas out of dissimilar metals, and specifically copper tubing and brass bar stock. And does that have a negative effect on the resonance capability of the antenna? It was an easy way to make it out of a copper tube and a piece of 1/8 brass bar stock I observed today. Tried to get it, find a resonant frequency with an analyzer, and really couldn't seem to get it down to something tolerable. So I'm just curious if an antenna is made of dissimilar metals, vertical quarter wave 2 meter in this case, does it have a negative effect? That's the question.
I think the answer, Dave, is absolutely not. As far as first manufacturing the antenna is concerned, you could mix together steel, aluminum, brass, copper, all kinds of things. And if you've got them soldered together, tightly connected together, as far as resin is concerned, it'll look like a chump. However, when you do have dissimilar metals, the only real thing you've got to worry about is the... I'm going to try going through the other input. Standby.
Damn, None. Set. Clock. None. Set. Ready.
Okay.
K2RIW, Stephen City, Gary. I'm turning this down. I don't know, John, if you've got Echolink, that's a good way to go. You can get in that way. Back on.
I recommend we do. Let's give it another try. Okay, looks like we're back in operation. K2RIW here. John, if you're copying me now, the normal way, 146.25.85, fire away with your questions. By the way, during that event, I was hearing the mobile signal, S1, on the input, and I could tell by the amount of power it takes me to override that he was within 1 mile of the repeater at Glen Oaks. So that's a rather small amount of real estate to monitor, if you know what I mean. KC2WGB, if you're there. K2RIW on the TechNet. Go ahead, John. Andy, I'm hearing you. Go ahead. John. Too bad you don't have a second receiver where you can also be monitoring on 25 K2IW. All right, looks like we're back in operation. Looks like it's time to start again, John, and go right ahead with your letters. KC2WGB, K2RAW.
KC2WGB, sitting here in Mel's Corner. Yes, Dick, have a question concerning octaves. I have a...
Two to one ratio would be one octave, four to one.
ratio would be two octaves. Somewhere between them would be, like say, a 3-to-1. So the next question is, how could we really confirm a fraction of a frequency octave? And mathematically, the way you do that is
like that. Brooklyn is way worse than it real right, man. I seen you when you got caught in that mic stress. You couldn't take the press because you ain't like that. Man, I'm like that. I'm like that. My cousin gon' get that heat, see the light back. When he write me a letter, I write back. If man write you, you'll send him a kite back. You ain't like that.
You got gold.
Bumped in the take my night back. Wish I could bring my man Ike back. He wasn't real. Like that.
Thank you. Situation right now is the 2.5 receiver is off, but if anybody can get on UHF, 444.125 input, 449.125 output, or you can send an 85 output. But the input is open on 444.125 if anybody wants to participate.
39 loop. So I think you could Google it, John, but at least you've got an answer. Almost everybody's got nowadays a handheld calculator that can take logarithms. And it doesn't matter if you take the logarithms to the base 10 or the natural logarithms to the base 2.718. In either case, as long as you take both logs the same way, you'll get the right answer. So you first take the log with your real frequency ratio, then take the log of 2, divide the second log into the first log, and you know exactly how many octaves. So now, if somebody wanted you to change to 2/10 of an octave, or 9.1 octaves, by working that process backwards, you know how to do it, or vice versa. Forward is easier. I think you could, once you know how to do it forward, I think you would be able to know how to do it backwards. Is that true, John? KC2WGB, K2IOW.
Yes, I think that's descriptive enough, Dick, because actually he would work out the forward problem and then see how that goes, how the chain goes, and then just reverse it. I don't think that would be a problem, but that's a great idea. Google it, as many other things that we do, and I'm sure he'll get a full explanation. I think online there's a thing called Math Tutor, which probably would walk him right through it. I haven't used it in a couple of years, but I know that was very good of his time. But excellent suggestion.
I'm pretty sure, John, you're now coming through the 375 input, 975 input, in other words, and you're coming through the machine nice and quiet now. Before, you were a little bit noisy. So I guess you're using more power on 975, 375. Is that what you did, John? Or aim the antenna a little bit better? Over to you, John, K2LIW.
I lifted my power up a little bit. I'm running about 90 watts right now.
My QTH, and you're good and quiet through the machine. Okay. Mailing. Go to your second mailing, John. K2LIW.
Okay, Dick. This is a very interesting question. I have a young hand who would like to parallel crystals to get a frequency that he doesn't have a crystal for. Now, can he do that and it can be directly coupled without a network, or is he going to need two circuits to go along with that? I thought that was an interesting question. Back to you, Dick.
By the way, John, you are 40 over 9 without a preamplifier at my QTH, and you did quiet through the machine. So you've got it all figured out. In the case of a crystal resonator, each individual crystal wants to oscillate on its fundamental frequency or close to a harmonic head-up. Nothing else. You put two crystals in parallel. You could say the first one is a short circuit to the second one. Let me think about that. And there's a slight exception to this. Another way a fan dipole works. I gotta take your earphones off. I hear my own voice coming back. That's easy. The way I can get around that. Yeah, I can get around that. If I listen to the 375 output, I'm now hearing myself without delay. When you're operating a fan dipole, the signal coming down the transmission line automatically chooses the right dipole because that's the one that gives the 70 ohm impedance. And almost all of the wrong frequency dipoles represent almost an open circuit, you know, 1500 ohms, and no real power will go down there. So if you were using crystals in the series mode, then I guess you could put two crystals in parallel, and you could decide that your circuit is going to oscillate on crystal number one or crystal number two, depending on why the rest of the circuit resonated. But if you wanted, if I had a crystal that's on 7 megs and a crystal that's on 3 megs, and I put them in parallel, hoping to make them operate on 10 megacycles, Absolutely not. No, they won't do that. And could you put them in series to do that? No, you could not. The only way you could mix two crystals and get some other crazy frequency is you'd have to have a separate oscillator on each crystal. So in that example of mine, if I had an oscillator on crystal number one running at 7 megacycles, I got a second oscillator connected to crystal number two running at 3 megacycles. Now I take the output of those two oscillators, put them into the right kind of a mixer-like circuit, and yes, I will get 10 megs out per... Yes, I will get 10 megacycles out when I properly filter the output of that mixer. So each individual crystal has to operate on its frequency, or if it's operational on a harmonic, on its harmonic frequency. So each individual crystal has to operate on the fundamental or the harmonic on that particular oscillator transistor, let's say. And now the two outputs of the oscillators have to go into a mixer in order to get the sum and or difference frequency. So the crystals themselves, I'm reasonably sure you cannot connect them together in series or parallel and get any reasonable response, any reasonable response operation. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, that was my belief also, but I wasn't sure. So basically what we're saying is you cannot get a heterodyne by just paralleling those two crystals. You'd have to have two circuits after that, one oscillator for each, and then you could heterodyne the output of those two, and then take it from wherever you need it there. So a shortcut's not going to work, that's for sure.
That's exactly right, John. The shortcut won't work, so it's going to take you a minimum of three circuits, two separate oscillators and a mixer, and then some filtering to select the right frequency output, because when you mix the 10 and the 3, in my example, into that mixer, believe it or not, the output of the mixer is going to be a little bit of 10, a little bit of 3, even if it's a doubly balanced mixer, and then also some, a little bit of 3, a little bit of the 7, I should have said, quite a bit of 10, and quite a bit of 10 minus 3 is, 7 minus 3 is 4. There's going to be quite a bit of 4, quite a bit of 10, a little bit of 3, and a little bit of 7. So it's going to take a good filter on the output of the doubly balanced mixer, where you put together the two outputs of the two oscillator stages, where each oscillator stage is running on a separate crystal. So the good news about a crystal is it does an extremely good at the job of determining the frequency. The bad news is that it won't do anything else per se. You can't mix them together right at the quartz crystal itself. It's sort of like saying, if I've got a child on a swing, let me drop, and I've got a child on a swing, and that swing wants one cycle every 2 seconds, I got another child on another swing that wants to swing at one cycle every 3 seconds, and now can I connect those two swings together and get the 3 seconds plus 2 seconds, 5 seconds? And the answer is no, you can't do that. The next question is, would the analogy with swings work with crystals? They're going to be a little bit different, but I think you can see what's going on here. Back to you, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick. Now, for my education on this subject, I would assume, I'm going to assume that the best of all worlds would be if the two heterodyne signals were the same RF amplitude out of those oscillators. Is that correct?
Good guess, but no. Because you're going to take the two oscillators and going through a doubly balanced mixer, full operation out of the doubly balanced mixer. The doubly balanced mixer wants to see a very strong signal on the local oscillator port, and it wants to see a signal about 10 dB weaker on the RF port. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that. It's looking for a strong signal on the oscillator port. It's looking for a weaker signal on the RF port. In order for the W mount to behave well, the RF port signal must be 10 dB weaker than the LO port signal, and the LO port signal should be above a certain minimum amplitude of the mixer. Is the one that's going to be for a different output, and that's going to be well filtered. Now that's if you did. That's if you did it with one single doubly balanced mixer. There are more complicated circuits by which you could do this. There's ways of using a transistor as a mixing device. But the nicest way to do it is with a doubly balanced mixer. And to get the best performance out of a doubly balanced mixer, that requires a little bit of study and reading of the books. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. Okay, Dick. Yeah, that always helps, that's for sure. A specific subject can go to the right chapter. Never fail. By the way, I'm a 50-watt. So just wanted to let you know that. I've got one more. Might be a little difficult. This one is a tough one. A moon bounce question.
Go ahead with your moon bounce question.
I'm going to try to cut this a little short because he goes on and on with this description. But basically, what he's trying to find out is if all of his transmission out of his horn would be in a parallel line, so all of the lines of radiation, the incident line, going assume that. When it strikes the disk of the moon, if it was flat, you'd have a reflection. But being that we have a curvature there of the sphere, and we're working on one hemisphere, why aren't there more than one delay that's detected, being that there's a difference?